Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
I gotta catch a glimpse of these warlocks. Let's make a move.
She's going around the corner.
Come on.
It's time for Dirt and Sprague.
True love is hard to find. Sometimes you think you have true love, and then you catch the early flight home from San Diego, and a couple of nude people jump out of your bathroom blindfolded.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
We should mate.
What?
Date. I said we should date sometime. You know, socially. Go ahead, kick it.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
You're pretty sick, Chubbs.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. It's going to be more college football. We've got on the line right now the Preview Magazine. Phil Steele's College Football Preview Magazine comes out every year. It's almost like Christmas for us. He's our good friend out in the Ohio area. ESPN, PhilSteele.com. Find him on Twitter at PhilSteele042. And we got the big guy on now. Phil, it's good to have you on to talk some college football, my man. We will start in the Pac-12. Just your overall impressions of the conference. Do we have a playoff team in this conference?
The possibility definitely exists. I can tell you that when I went over the team, and it's a team you're not going to expect, USC, when I went over the team with Coach Helton, they are loaded. Every position has got good talent, good depth. And I think USC is going to have their best year in quite some time. And then the second one, at the end of the conversations, I went over the Oregon Duck team with Coach Cristobal. And, wow, especially, you know, this is not the Mark Helfrich's Oregon Duck team, which was just speed and gimmickry and offense and weak defense. This team has got a defense. My number 6 rated defensive line, number 13 linebackers, number 1 secondary in the country.
Wow.
And they've got, even though they lost all those players off the offensive line, Penei Sewell's still back. Cristobal's an offensive line guy. He'll get an offensive line going. And they've got a lot of speed at running back and receiver. Big question marks quarterback, but they got two capable candidates in Tyler Shough and Anthony Brown. So I think when you look at Oregon and USC, those are the two teams that are the most talented in the Pac-12 this year.
Yeah, the USC point is interesting. We know they're talented every single year. I think there's always questions about Clay Helton and can he put it all together. But I'll start, though, with Oregon. I mean, you had a chance to talk to Mario Cristobal. We know how good they're going to be on the defensive side of the ball. How big of an impact do you expect Joe Moorhead to have? And then when you talked to Cristobal about the quarterback battle, what did he have to say in terms of is there a leader in the clubhouse? Because it's one of those weird years where they had to shut spring practice down, and it's hard to get a read on that position.
Yeah, and I think that affected a player like Jay Butterfield, for example, who Coach Cristobal is high on. He's mobile, and he's a true freshman. He was in for the spring, but he wasn't able to get in those spring practices. They did bring in a veteran in Anthony Brown, but Tyler Shough, the quarterback, I think is the guy that probably entered spring as the starter and left spring as the starter. So he's the guy that's the leader in the clubhouse right now.
Phil Steele of Phil Steele Preview Football Magazine is our guest here talking all things Pac-12 football. Give him a follow on Twitter at PhilSteele042. You can find his football preview magazine on shelves everywhere. Phil, I'll ask you this too on the Oregon side of things. When you look at the conference schedule, the North is just such a tough ask. And I think it's going to be quite the test for Oregon. And if they can get through it, I think it's going to set them up better for the playoff. When you look at the North outside of Oregon, you named USC as well as the two top teams in this conference. How would you power rank the rest of the North?
Well, number two, I would go with Washington. And, you know, Jimmy Lake has done a phenomenal job with that defense the last couple of years. I remember 3 years ago, they lost three number two draft picks out of the secondary. Secondary was still my top 10. Last year, they only had two returning starters on defense. Still only gave up 349 yards per game. Well, now he's got to take over a team with only 12 returning starters and without the benefit of spring practice. But he knows these players, and he likes the talent. And I think defensively, they could have – they're going to challenge Oregon for the best defense in the Pac-12 this year. Offensively, there's question marks at quarterback, but there is talent as well. Dylan Morris, Jacob Sermon, two guys, they're going to battle it out there. In the offensive line, while inexperienced, they got some big boys up front on that offensive line. So I think Washington plays into the mix. And then a little bit of a surprise, Stanford. And David Shaw didn't forget how to coach football. I know they went 4-8 last year, but this guy's got a good team. He's got David Mills at quarterback. He's got one of the better offensive lines in the country this year. In fact, I rated number 15. Good special teams, good receivers. And I think you're going to see Stanford reemerge. Now, the good news is Oregon gets both those teams at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that helps out a lot. Interesting you have Stanford there at number three after their down season last year. Where are you at on Cal? Because Cal is a team that I think a lot of people view maybe as a sleeper this year. Very talented when their quarterback was healthy last year. It was almost a tale of two seasons for them. I'm assuming you have them slotted in at fourth. Your thoughts on Cal?
Yeah, I got him in that fourth slot. And you mentioned last year with Chase Garbers as a starting quarterback, whenever he started and finished a game, they were undefeated. And whenever he was not there, they only won one game, and that was with Devin Monster at QB. But they're talented on offense, not overwhelmingly talented, but they'll be good. And you know, if Justin Wilcox is the defense coordinator, they're going to be good on defense. So I rate them. All three units on defense are in my top units, the quarterback and receivers. Offensive line might be a little bit of a question mark for me this year.
Yeah, Phil Steele is our guest here of the Phil Steele College Football Preview Magazine on Twitter, at PhilSteele042. All right, Oregon, USC, Stanford, UW, you've addressed those. What about my alma mater? What are my beeves looking like to you when you look at their schedule, when you talk with Jonathan Smith? What do you think with Oregon State, who had a pretty good end to their year, finishing with five wins?
You know, I didn't pick them last this year. How about that?
Hey, all right, there we go.
The one question I asked Coach Smith, and it grinded him a little bit. I said, "Here you are. You're playing Washington State. You're up 53-42. Four minutes and 17 seconds left. You got a bowl in your hand, and just went away." That's how close they were last year. And I think the advantage they have over Washington State is Washington State's got a brand new head coach. Didn't have benefit of spring practice. Not, you know, he has to learn his players yet. Meanwhile, at Oregon State, when I talked to Jonathan Smith the first time, going over that team that first year, I mean, I was like, wow, are they going to win very many games at all? Two wins, that's about what I expected out of them. Last year, I said they were about two touchdowns better than the previous year's Oregon State, and they were. They actually got closer to a bowl than I thought they would. The key to me is going to be quarterback play. You know, last year, Jake Luton gave them exceptional quarterback play. Mm-hmm. 28 touchdowns, just three interceptions. Now, Smith is high on Tristan Gebbia and Chance Nolan, the two guys that are possible replacements. If he can get good quarterback play, they are loaded at running back with Jefferson and Baylor. The offensive line solid. The defense, I mean, with Hamilcar coming back at that outside linebacker spot, they've got actually my number 10 linebacking core in the entire country. So this is a dangerous Oregon State team that is very close to a bowl game last year. I'm hoping they break through and get one this year.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, when you look around the conference, the decision to not play those non-conference games that the Pac-12 has officially made. I'm curious when I ask, what program benefits the most from that? Because you've had, I mean, Oregon and Ohio State wiped off the board, Michigan and Washington, USC and Alabama. You know, Oregon State, we're just talking about them. They were going to go down to Oklahoma State, USC and Notre Dame, Stanford, Notre Dame. Which of these programs do you think is going to benefit most from playing a conference-only schedule this year?
I'm going to say USC because they avoid Alabama and Notre Dame. And those are two pretty big misses for USC. The second one, you know, I don't think Washington benefits from avoiding Michigan. They would have gotten them at home, and I think they probably would have beat Michigan. But I would say Oregon avoiding Ohio State was nice. And how about Oregon State avoiding Oklahoma State? You know, Oklahoma State brought back Chuba Hubbard at running back, who could have gone to the NFL. Tylan Wallace, a wide receiver, could have gone to the NFL. That's going to be a tough Oklahoma State team. So I think the Beavers benefit from not playing them.
Yeah, Phil Steele of Phil Steele's Preview Football Magazine. It's out every year. It's one of our favorites. He's one of our favorite guests here to talk all things Pac-12 football on Twitter, at PhilSteele042. Give him a follow, and PhilSteele.com. What's gone on with Chip Kelly in your estimation when you see them play versus when you guys talk on the phone to get the, you know, the roster breakdown and the depth chart? Where's the disconnect when you see them?
Well, he's actually the one coach in the Pac-12 I haven't talked to. So that's one I haven't talked to. And, you know, what I see with Chip Kelly is, remember when he was back at Oregon? He had they had the facilities. Oregon at that time had better facilities than everybody else. He also was the only guy running that fast, hurry-up offense, and that caught a lot of defenses by surprise. Well, now everybody runs a hurry-up offense. Everybody in the Pac-12's got great facilities now, and he doesn't have those advantages. We see that in his recruiting classes, and on the field, his offenses aren't as dynamic. So I think I see a lot of, you know, can he get through? Can he break through and get to a bowl game? Chances are there for him this year, but I'm going to wait to see it. I don't know if he doesn't have the same advantages he had when he was at Oregon.
Well, and sticking with his in-city rival, you started this whole interview mentioning USC as a chance, as a team that could make a run at the college football playoff. Now, I feel like I hear this about USC every single year. They got all the talent in the world, and everybody kind of gets high on them, and then at some point they end up stumbling. Why is this year different for USC with their talented roster?
The overall talent's one thing. The last year they did suffer a lot of injuries. And, you know, let's look at a couple of their losses last year, for example. Now, the toughest start, I've always said the toughest start for any quarterback is your first road start. Well, guess what? When they played BYU, they had a first-time quarterback, Keaton Slovis, making his first road start, and they lost that game by a field goal in overtime. The next time they went on the road at Washington, they had their third-string quarterback making for his first start on the road, and a couple of key interceptions in the end zone cost them against Washington, a game they blew three red zone chances and lost by 14 points. They lost to Notre Dame at Notre Dame by 3 points. So all three of those games, I think, had they been healthier, they could easily have won all three. And then the one game they didn't was Oregon. I thought USC played a great first half against Oregon and sort of snowballed them in the second half. But I think this is a more talented team, one that last year's injuries will benefit them because it gave a lot of players experience. And I do like the talent that Coach Helton's bringing in there.
Phil, I'm pretty high on Herm Edwards, just as it's nice to have him in the Pac-12. We love having him on the
great
show.
Guy.
Yeah, absolutely. He is one of the stand-up guys in football. And while the start for him has been pretty encouraging, they seem to be kind of that trendy hot pick within the conference of ASU, Jaden Daniels. Look, I can see it. I don't know if I'm fully investing yet. I think year three and year four are going to be pretty big to tell us what his future truly is going to be down in Tempe. What say you on Arizona State this year?
Yeah, I think they'll be a good team, but I've got them coming in third in the South. I like Jaden Daniels, but there are question marks that I have with Arizona State offensively. I do not have their running backs, the receivers, or their offensive line ranked in my top units in the front of the magazine. Now, defensively, I've got all three units there. Special teams are going to be good, and Jaden Daniels is the wild card. He's an exceptional quarterback, so I think he's going to help, but I do have question marks. With only four returning starters on offense, it's not an overwhelming talent group that surrounds him on offense.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Utah this year? I mean, a team that was a win away potentially from a college football playoff before losing to Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game last year. If I'm not mistaken, I believe they're replacing a lot of guys. Just what are you expecting out of the Utes this year?
Kyle Whittingham still coaching them?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he is.
they're still going to be good. And, you know, you look at the quarterback replacements. You lose a guy like Tyler Huntley. They've got Jake Bentley, who started at South Carolina, and Cam Rising, another outstanding transfer, battling to take his spot. I don't see a Zach Moss at running back this year, but they've got talent there. The receiving corps is probably the best that Whittingham's had since he's been there. He had a lot of possession receivers when he started there. That's much improved right now. They've got speed there. The offensive line could be one of the more better units in the Pac-12. And defensively, they're good at all three layers. And are the special teams going to be good at Utah? Oh, yeah, it's Utah. They're going to be good. So this is Kyle Whittingham. I don't think they're as good as last year's squad. I'm a little disappointed they didn't win the Pac-12 title game. I know I'm weren't speaking here in Oregon, but I had them as my number one surprise team. Had they won that game, it would have been the damn playoff, and it would have been another year for my number one surprise team. But, yeah, I thought they got close last year. They're not going to be the last year year's level, but I still think they're going to be really good.
All right, there we go. To find out more info, you got to get the newest Phil Steele edition of the College Football Preview magazine. He's been doing this a long time, folks. He knows what he's talking about, talks to almost all of the coaches and gets the depth charts filled out, and he's one of our favorites here in Portland. Phil Steele on Twitter, at PhilSteele042, PhilSteele.com, and ESPN as well. Phil, thanks so much for the time, man. We always appreciate having you.
Hey, guys, always appreciate you having me on and love talking football with you guys. Have yourself a great offseason.
Absolutely. There we go. Good stuff from Phil Steele of the Phil Steele Football Preview Magazine.
Here we go again.
So he's got your Ducks as the best team in the conference and my Beavs winning the Rose Bowl this year. What a year.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he quite said that. That's not quite what I took out of that interview.
I'm sorry, that's what I took away.
He does like your Beavs, not quite to win the Rose Bowl, and he does not think that Oregon is the best team in the conference.
Well, he played you right there with USC.
I know, but you asked which team is the best chance of making the college football playoff. His answer was USC, so clearly he thinks USC is better. They play each other in Autzen this year.
I think it's natural. It's just people, who's going to win the conference? USC.
It's a USC thing. Yeah. I've heard that story so many times.
It's basically my whole life.
And look, again, there is no doubting the talent on that roster. But is this the year that they're going to do it?
Right. Is Graham Harrell really going to put them over the top? Oh, I'm just kidding. Is Clay Helton finally going to coach?
Yeah, no, Clay Helton's still there. Last time I checked, he's still there. Yeah.
All right, well, good stuff from him. Heather Dinich is going to join us at the bottom of the hour, so we only have a 15-minute window here. We're going to get weird.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe we won't. I don't know. We're back with more. Dirt and Sprague on radio.com and 1080 The Fan. All right, Heather Dinich is going to join us coming up at the bottom of the hour. I looked up Johnny Depp's IMDb because sometimes I can remember that I was supposed to do stuff. The only movie that I can think of in the last few years is probably the Murder on the Orient Express.
I did not see it.
Did you see that, Swigard? You strike me as somebody that likes those kind of movies.
It's kind of a Clue.
It's like
Clue kind of game.
Well, yeah, it's a remake of, Agatha Christie. I think it's an Agatha Christie novel. I did not see that one.
I'd heard good things about it, but I admittedly, I'm kind of just throwing that out there because I had heard a few different people tell me they liked that movie.
According to his IMDb page, by the way, apparently he played Donald Trump in a TV movie in 2016.
Yeah, The Art of the Deal. I need to see him as Trump.
Did anybody watch that?
So that was Trump's book.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they did a made-for-TV movie entitled The Art of the Deal movie.
Why did we not know this?
Oh, yikes. That is not good.
He actually wow.
That deserves a Google.
You got to Google wherever you're at right now. You got to Google Johnny Depp as Trump. That's what I Googled. And wow.
His career went to that place where he's doing made for TV movies. And that was 4 years ago, man. That's not good.
I bet you a TV movie gives a guy like that maybe a mil.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the last big one that I remember, I mean, they came out with the new Pirates of the Caribbean, which I did not see. He's in the, new Harry Potter movies. They're doing those.
What?
There's, a new thing, kind of an offshoot of Harry Potter movies.
Oh, the Fantastic.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Those kind of, so he's, I believe in those. They've come out with one or two of those, if I'm not mistaken.
Grindelwald.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I think the first one came out in 2016. Prior to that, the last big one that he did that I
can't
remember.
I believe it was Trump.
Yeah, go Google that. If you're sitting at home, Google that, because, yikes, that's bad. I remember The Lone Ranger and how big of a deal that movie was supposed to be.
Well, twofold here. It was one of the bigger box office flops of that year.
I mean, that was an absolute disaster.
And people felt uncomfortable with him.
Yeah.
Doing the Tonto thing.
Yeah, I mean, you're going back further than that. I mean, you're going all the way back to, Alice in Wonderland, Public Enemies. Public Enemies came out in 2009.
Yeah, it's been a while
played
for
John
him.
Dillinger. That was 2009.
Yeah.
It's over a decade ago, man.
Yeah, and that Rango, that Pixar-type movie, that one sucked where he was a lizard.
Yeah, so that's kind of, that was why I asked the question is, are we done with him and can he revive it? Because not many people can go essentially a decade without a critically acclaimed role. He's had some movies that have made, I'm sure those Harry Potter movies made good money. I'm sure the Pirates of the Caribbean that came out a couple of years ago made good money. But I'm talking a critically acclaimed, man, that was a good acting job. You go a decade without one of those, that's a long gap.
But wouldn't you say McConaughey, he didn't go from nothing, but he had, he was basically the rom-com guy until he took True Detective and then the Dallas Buyers Club. We didn't put Matthew McConaughey in this top tier actors category. He was making like 27 girlfriends.
I also
stuff.
View that differently though, because he was an up and coming actor, and he had a certain role that he played early on in his career, and he eventually grew out of that. I think Bradley Cooper is a good example of that too.
Yeah.
A guy that kind of started in the comedy realm and then has done some very, very good movies.
So, well, Hanks did that.
Hanks is a great example of that.
Hanks, he started in comedy. Yeah.
Look at Tom Hanks' 1980s movies and then see the run that he went on after that.
Yeah, you go to the Burbs.
That's
to
what I'm saying.
Though,
like, and so I get it. Like, yeah, some people get in their little roles and then they can get out of those roles. But I'm like, time passes you by and you just don't have it anymore.
So you don't think he can act still?
One of the few guys that comes to my mind is Michael Keaton, probably.
But he came back, though.
I know, I'm saying as a guy who has come back, a guy who took a big gap, didn't really do much.
Well, Travolta did that. Travolta went way underground for a while. I forget. After, I mean,
was it the OJ thing that brought him back, or did he have something before that?
Well, Pulp Fiction was his comeback.
Oh, I didn't realize he took a big gap before that.
Oh, yeah. After
was
Grease?
He into Scientology?
Well, he had. He did Saturday Night Fever and Grease. And Urban Cowboy, and he had a ton
Urban
in the
Cowboy.
70s,
Dirt's calling.
70s, early 80s, and then he was in Welcome Back, Kotter on TV.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction came out in 1994. I mean, he did, some voice, like Look Who's Talking was a voice thing, right? Yeah, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
No, he's
the voice in
that. Oh, God, it's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
Yeah, he was doing stuff like that, and everybody thought he was pretty much
No, that's
done.
A valid one, yeah. I mean, and some of these, and maybe these are before my time a little bit, so, Look Who's Talking seems like the most prominent movie that he was in. But, yeah, you go back then, Urban Cowboy came out in 1980.
Yeah.
Staying Alive, 1983. Grease was 1978. Saturday Night Fever, 77. Yeah, so that's a pretty decent gap. That's a good one.
By the way, R.I.P. Kelly Preston.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did that shock anybody else?
Yeah.
I know she they were trying to keep it quiet, but.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was, from what I read, they had never announced it.
He was crazy about that. John Sukanik was tweeting about For Love of the Game 2 days ago. And I saw the tweet and I said, admittedly, I've always liked Love of the Game. I know some of the love scenes, whatever. I think the baseball stuff's great. Like the interpersonal dialogue that he has while he's pitching a perfect game.
Some of it's a bit too telegraphed.
I'm with you there.
But you got Vin Scully to be the announcer. So.
Absolutely. A little cheesy. Yeah. The New York fan is kind of stupid. He's like, hey, bum. And then he gives him a standing go.
Okay, good career.
But I was talking about that. And then I mentioned, I was like, yeah, Kelly Preston, like smoking hot in that time. And somebody else responded, yeah, totally agree. 2 days later, she's dead.
I remember actually reading your tweet because John tweeted about that.
That's crazy. I hadn't talked about Kelly Preston for years
she
before
She was great
that.
In that movie, too.
Yeah.
She was really good in that movie.
Yeah. I thought she was good in Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire.
Upset girlfriend.
Yeah, her car breaks down, I think, right? Isn't how they met? Something like that. Her car breaks down. Yeah. And he fixes it for her or something like that. Yeah. And falling in love.
I guess she was in the Gotti movie.
Yeah, which I never saw either.
Which, by the way, John Travolta, it's a good one, swag. I would say, though, since he's come back, people almost always make fun of what he does because he's so bad.
Well, no.
Remember Battlefield Earth?
Yeah, I mean, Travolta's made a couple of comebacks now because didn't people rave? Now, I haven't ever watched it, but people raved about the OJ show.
I watched it.
And people raved about that.
He's
giving it up.
He's like the third or fourth guy in that show that I'd say stuck out for me.
Okay. By the way, Will Darkin's texting in, going against your Matthew McConaughey theory, saying that his breakout role was The Time to Kill.
McConaughey?
Which is a great movie if you haven't seen.
No, I've seen that movie. I'd have to think about that.
That was early era. That was pre-rom-coms. I mean, that was post-Dazed and Confused, if I'm not mistaken, but that was like pre- Failure to Launch, that kind of stuff.
Well, Will's an idiot. His breakout role after Dazed and Confused was easily Angels in the Outfield. Come on. A center fielder getting carried by God?
That's a good point.
Come on.
That's a good point.
All right. Heather Dinich is going to join us. This is the Daily Ticker. We moved it an hour. She's going to join us coming up next. What is college football going to do? And if we're playing conference only, how do you pick playoff teams? This is going to be a nightmare. But let's talk about some college football with Heather Dinich of ESPN next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
That's right, we bumped the Daily Ticker back to 1:30 today because we were excited when we found out Heather was going to be able to join us. There's a lot going on in the college football world. We're all trying to make sense of it. Is there going to be a season, non-conference, conference games? What in the world's going on? One of our favorites, Heather Dinich. She's the college football playoff guru for ESPN. Give her a follow on Twitter, at CFB Heather. Heather, thanks as always for the time. I'll just start kind of generic. Where are you at right now on July 14th about the idea of having a college football season this fall?
Well, I think based on right this second, it's seeming less and less likely that there's going to be an on-time start at the very least. As for the legitimate concerns surrounding college football, I think people have to remember who the decision makers are, and it starts with the coronavirus. And then it goes to the medical experts and the local government officials, and then it goes to the Power Five commissioners. And I think what we saw in the Pac-12 last week is the very first real example of a conference having to say, it's not healthy or safe to do this right now. What the Big Ten did was make plans, right? They made a choice to go to a conference-only schedule to give them flexibility in case the season is interrupted or delayed, right? What happened in the Pac-12 was, this is here, this is now, and we have to make a decision because in Arizona and Southern California, this isn't safe.
You know, Heather, I think one thing that's stuck out for me, aside from all the other, you know, the COVID, the conferences seem to be on different levels right now, where the Pac-12 is saying one thing, the Big Ten is saying what they want, the SEC is reluctant. Have we had a better case than maybe right now to maybe kick around the idea of having a commissioner of college football in the way other leagues do, and somebody that kind of works with the Power Five commissioners, so you kind of have one big body, whereas right now it seems like mild chaos where each conference is just dictating what they want to do on their own?
Well, I think the mild chaos is a reflection of what's going on in our country as far as state by state down to county by county differences in the way that this is being handled, right? Even if you had a czar of college football right now, so to speak, that person's hands would be tied by what's happening in California is not happening here in the state of Maryland, where
right,
I live.
Right.
And I think that's really hard. Where I think it could be helpful, where the NCAA could help and conference commissioners could help, is a blanket testing policy. I'm not smart enough to figure out what that looks like or where the money comes from to fund that, because I've been told from Shane Lyons at West Virginia, the athletic director there, that it is costing between $20,000 to $25,000 a week to test every single athlete in every sport.
Can you say that again? How much?
$20,000 to $25,000. I mean, wow. That's phenomenal. And what's even more interesting is that in spite of that, the Ivy League and Patriot Leagues, which recently canceled their fall competitions, did not make their decisions based on finances. They made it based on what their campuses cannot do and based on the advice of medical experts. It's simply impractical at the Ivy League schools where there are travel restrictions, where you can't have groups of more than 20 to 50 at a time to have competition, right?
Right.
So it's just, it's hard to say, hey, everybody, let's do this the same way. Now, don't count out partnerships. If there is a football season, there is collaboration going on. There has to be, because Notre Dame needs the ACC to fill out the rest of its schedule. The Big 12 and the SEC have LSU Texas. You know, there are still other non-conference games. There's the SEC-ACC rivalries, Georgia-Georgia Tech, Florida-Florida State, all those things, right, where that the Big Ten and Pac-12 might not necessarily influence them because of those variances in their schedules.
Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah. We're talking with college football playoff guru Heather Dinich. Give her a follow on Twitter at CFB Heather. It's interesting you bring that up. You know, I was talking to a high school football coach in the area, in the state of Oregon at least, but he coaches in Southern Oregon, and we were talking about the idea of not having a season, and it's tough for some coaches to hear that because there's certain counties in the state of Oregon that have had, like, you know, 22 cases the whole time, and there's nobody in the hospital, right? Whereas the Portland metro area is a little different. You know, taking that to a college football angle, what do you think the odds are that we end up with kind of like a game of Survivor? Like, things are not good in the Arizona area or, as you mentioned, in the Southern California region. But to my knowledge, I think both Corvallis and Eugene and those counties have been doing well, at least up until this point. Like, is there a chance we play a game of Survivor where some programs are just left behind and we move on and have a season without them?
Absolutely. In the American Athletic Conference, Commissioner Mike Oresko told me that they're pretty much at the point where they've decided if one or two teams can't play, so be it. They're going to play with everybody else. Now, I would imagine that other conference commissioners feel the same. I haven't polled every single one about that. I think the question is, at what point do you draw the line? At what point do you say, okay, we have five teams that can't play, right? So, all of that goes into it. I can tell you that I talked to the executive director of the Football Bowl Association yesterday, and he said, look, if conferences are playing 10 games, then you still have a chance to be 500, which is bowl eligibility. So you don't necessarily have to change those requirements or ask the NCAA for a waiver on that end. So I think all of those things weigh into what the big picture might look like.
Yeah, how do you, I mean, I don't even know where you start with a playoff, because if you have Power 5 conferences going conference games only, and let's just say for argument's sake they all agree to the same number, which I think makes a further argument in the future that you should have the same number of conference games if you're doing it during COVID. I just, who's the odd man out in a scenario like that with a weird season?
And you thought the playoff wasn't fair before.
I know.
Everybody's going to have an asterisk by their name this year, man. Good luck, selection committee.
God. Can you imagine if you had five undefeated teams or five one-loss teams?
Power 5 conference schedule.
Good luck figuring that out.
And this year we expanded, Heather, huh? We moving to 8 and staying there?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll tell you what. If anything could get those wheels turning, this is probably one of those situations. But not this year. Yeah. Not this year.
Yeah, we're talking with Heather Dinich of ESPN. You know, one of the things that we've kicked the tires on a little bit, too, and we've asked, you know, a handful of people around the college football landscape about it, and I feel like I get a 50-50 split. Some people laugh at the notion and other people love the notion. When the idea of playing a spring football season is brought up, what have you heard and what do you think about it?
Please check out our article on ESPN.com today. Yeah, see, shameless self-plug right there. Mark Schleba and I spent a good deal of reporting on this very topic. But I think the bottom line to answer your question is that there are a lot of decision makers who say, we can't dismiss this, right? It's not our first choice. It's not our second choice. But it has to be a viable option. And no, the NFL draft cannot be the determining factor on it.
Did you take we talked about Sankey's comments to Marty and McGee, and, you know, the way, I don't know, I read it in a certain tone. Now, I could have listened to the interview. I know it was done on radio, but I read the quotes. It came off to me, Heather, and correct me if I'm wrong, more of a guy that has largely dictated and been in charge. Like the Power 5 conferences, I think you look at him and say the SEC, the Big Ten, they kind of do what they want to do because they win national championships and they're consistently in it. I read his comments about a fall doesn't happen, probably not going to have a season. I read that more as sour grapes because it feels like the Big Ten is maybe open to this. The Pac-12 is absolutely open to spring football, whereas SEC might be just chugging along in the back and not being able to dictate what happens and how it happens.
Well, I think one of their biggest concerns is not having big name players available because of the NFL draft, right? And the SEC does have probably the highest number of draft players at that time, right, in the spring. So I could see that concern. But if you get to the point where that's the option. That's the only option in some way, shape, or form. You know, I don't think that they'll have much of a choice but to go with it if you're going to see a football game played. But, you know, I was talking with my colleague Adam Rittenberg about this the other day, and if that's where the sport does wind up, I think people could really enjoy it because by that point, regardless of who plays or who doesn't play, everyone will just be so thankful to see a college football game in any shape or sort that they'll be so happy. And, you know, if Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields don't want to play, so be it. I guarantee you there will be a gazillion college football fans who are cheering on the kids that do want to be there.
Well, and to your point too, Heather, I mean, those programs are always turning over talent, right? So if we missed one more year of Lawrence and Fields, that sucks. But Clemson, for example,
five-star guy.
Yeah. Clemson got the number one kid from 2020. Yeah. I presume he'd be the guy to step up. So it'd be fun to watch a new young prospect come up.
Yeah. It would be fun. Yeah, it would be fun. People would just be happy to see it. But that being said, most people have said to me a very logical thing, which is, who's to say we're going to be any better off then than we are now as far as the circumstances regarding the coronavirus? And that is what's really concerning people, is saying, look, it would be foolish to scrap it right now and say we're going to have a spring season because nobody has any idea what the state of the state is going to be at that time.
Yeah, it's a great point. I feel like we were doing that with football in March when we shut everything down. We said, well, football's got a long time to figure this all out. Now here we are in the middle of July, still trying to figure all this out. Is there a date? I know we've heard like kind of a late July window for the Big Ten and the Pac-12 to announce what their schedules will look like. The SEC has said give us to the end of July. Like, when's the kind of line in the sand date that they have to have something figured out for how it's going to look officially in the fall?
Well, I think if it's going to be an on-time start to the season, you're looking at July 31st, maybe August 1st, somewhere around that 48 hours to say we're going to do it or we're not. Now, if you want to push the season back, that's a different scenario, right? Then that buys you a little bit more time. But if you're going to have an on-time start to the season, it seems from the decision makers that the end of this month, which, by the way, is like a skinny minute away. We keep saying the end of July, like it's far away, but it's right around the corner.
We're gonna be there in 2 weeks,
Heather. If you were a betting individual, and I'm not holding you to this for the next 3 months. I know COVID's so different and fluid every week. If you were a betting individual, where would you put the chips that we have conference fall football, or that ultimately this is going to get bumped to maybe early to late winter 2021?
I think it gets bumped and then it gets bumped again and then it gets bumped again, because I say that not based on interviews with commissioners, though I've done multiple interviews with decision makers. I say that based on not only the fact of the trend of the coronavirus, but you're adding college students into the equation back on campus. We're no longer talking about student athletes as an isolated group anymore. We're talking about fraternities and sororities and bars and classes and labs and whatever else might go on, from 40,000 to 60,000 people in one space, if that's what it looks like. And to me, that's just, I don't know how you overcome that.
Yeah, it's always felt like it's the most difficult to bring back with all the institutions and the students, everything that goes into it. Great stuff.
That sounds like no football.
Yeah, college football guru Heather Dinich speaking some truth. Heather, give her a follow on Twitter at CFB Heather.
Heather was pushing it back, and then I thought she ran out of going back. Now the year's over. Like, we're going to a new season.
How many backs can we move? What year is it now? 2024? What's happened? Heather, thanks as always for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
There you go. Heather Dinich of ESPN.
Dive into that article, too, with Schlabach.
Well, look, I'm just glad we need to have all options on the table. We've had some people come on the show and say there's no chance, it's not going to happen, spring football's a bad idea. I'm not buying it. I think it's a good idea. And I'm not saying you need to make an announcement now. You want to see how practices start. Maybe things are trending okay on campuses in July and August. But the number of how much it's costing to test guys every single week, like, that's really alarming. These programs and institutions are already in financial trouble, but you're trying to get sports underway. And she said at West Virginia, it's costing them $20,000 to $25,000 a week to test all their athletes.
If you're at 25K, just going 12 weeks, you're probably a little more than that. You're looking at 300.
I mean, that adds up very quickly. Yeesh. Very quickly for some cash-strapped institutions around the country. So great stuff from Heather Dinich. If you missed the start of it, we'll podcast it after the show. Also had Phil Steele on. That was a more just a conversation about what programs are bringing in to the upcoming year. Is there a year? So a college football-heavy show today. Let's get to the NFL. There's a couple of big contracts, it sounds like, about to be passed out. Who's getting paid? How much? We'll talk about that. Crunch time coming up next on Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Crunch time brought to you by Crunch Fitness with the Beaverton Aloha Division locations. They're all back up and running. They got great deals going on. Check them out, crunch.com, or stop by one of their locations. I'll be back at the Glorious House of Gains tomorrow.
No days off.
You know what Bill's doing right now? He's pounding a Subway sandwich in a commercial.
A foot long.
Right? He's pounding a foot long. Okay.
He's not happy that people are taking his photo from far away, too, because it's one of those like you act like you're eating it, but you're not.
I can't even eat it.
It's such a big sandwich.
Get some contract news, shall we, in the NFL. A lot of money getting handed out today.
We're going to move on to the lettuce now.
Moving on to the tomato.
He strikes me as a spicy Italian guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
That's my jam.
You could just go spicy Italian?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't had Subway in so long.
Me either. Last time I did, it was gross.
Not good.
Not good.
Not a good experience. Mm-hmm. How about this? Chris Jones, this is the first one of the day, defensive tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs, has reached an agreement on a four-year contract that will pay him $80 million. It's going to include $37 million at signing, not too shabby, $60 million in fully guaranteed money, and $5 million in incentives, making the value of the contract up to $85 million.
Yeah, and the 60 guaranteed is pretty nice for Chris Jones. He was pretty, you know, a big impact player for them in their playoff run in the Super Bowl and what he was able to do and how disruptive he is because he's so massive. This is the second big deal they've given out, and it's very interesting to see the way that their GM, I think his name is Brett Veach, what him and Andy Reid, who gets paid and who doesn't, because now they're moving to where the Seahawks were. Seahawks had that young, unpaid quarterback with a good defense. Well, turns out Kansas City's got some young, good playmakers, some veteran guys like Chris Jones mixed with the young quarterback. They paid the quarterback. You've paid Chris Jones. There's got to be some more contracts to come down that pipeline. And now is the unfortunate part for sports fans trying to figure out if your team can keep the players that you think are valuable versus they have to let some of these guys walk eventually.
Well, Mahomes' deal doesn't kick in for he plays out two more years on his rookie deal.
Right.
So they've got some time to front load some deals for a few of veterans they want to keep around. And then, as we know, it's a lot of pressure on your scouting department's ability to draft.
Yeah, you got
to
draft well, get those guys on rookie deals. Yeah, his cap hit for the upcoming season, Mahomes, that is only going to be $5.3 million. So Chris Jones, when he signed this deal as well, I think he said something to the effect of, like, we're on the brink of a dynasty kind of thing. And they feel that way. They've been able to maintain most of that roster. The only guys are going to have more guaranteed money in their contracts, and this list is now going to change once we get the specifics on Myles Garrett's deal, which we'll get to in a moment. But as at the time of the signing were Frank Clark, Fletcher Cox, DeMarcus Lawrence, Von Miller, Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack. There's only the guys with more guaranteed money.
A few guys I'd rather have over Chris Jones there, but again, he was so valuable to what they were last year that if you think he can still give you that same value, go in. And to Swag's point, I mean, you got 2 years. That's why you set up a deal with Mahomes like that, so you can project your future and have an idea of maybe where your cap will be.
See if you can hit for two more years before that big Mahomes deal kicks in. Then it's going to be about drafting. And then that was this morning. And then a little bit later on, you know, about an hour ago or so, we're getting news now on a major extension for Myles Garrett with the Cleveland Browns. They had until tomorrow, I believe, a deadline to reach their contract extension. He is going to sign what looks like a 5-year, $125 million deal with $100 million in guarantees, $50 million fully guaranteed at signing, and he will be under contract until 2026. So apparently they have moved on from the helmet swinging incident in Cleveland.
Well, good for them in Cleveland. I wouldn't do it.
Wouldn't do it?
No way.
Wouldn't do it?
No, I'm not giving that dude $100 million guaranteed. I'm not. Look, he is a very, very good football player, so don't misinterpret that. But if you're shelling out contracts, especially for that team where you look around and like if Baker has a big year, guess who's getting paid? Baker. Nick Chubb, he's going to have to get a new contract. He's a young player at some point. Who knows if Kareem Hunt's going to stick around? What if he plays and he puts up production? I just think you look around that roster, there's going to be other guys. Miles Garrett's great, but he's also the same guy that got himself suspended.
He did in the costly moment of their season as well.
A very pivotal moment. They needed him bad. He couldn't rein that in, and that's unfortunate. Hopefully he learns from it. When you spend that kind of money on defensive linemen, you're hard-pressed to find that it actually ends up working out great.
Not that the incident was funny, but you know what I love chuckling about from time to time is remembering pre-COVID controversies. Remember when that was a huge deal? I think that was a Thursday night game, if I'm not mistaken.
Everybody watched that game.
That was like the conversation around the football world for days.
It set off. He almost murdered a human being.
Swing a helmet? Did the guy say the N-word? That was a thing, man, for like a week.
And then now, some players were saying he didn't say the N-word. Right. Other players were saying they may have heard an N-word.
Now you just look back, it's a little blip on the radar, and he's getting $125 million. So that's where we're at.
I know he's younger, but you're talking a $40 million guaranteed difference between Chris Jones and Miles Garrett.
All about age, yeah.
Garrett might have a couple more years on him. I'll give him that. But again, you're talking about a roster of very young talent that potentially is going to have to get paid. Teams fall into this trap, and you know sometimes it ends up working out okay for you. I just $100 million for Miles Garrett. That seems like an awful lot.
So it sounds like specific details will be coming out in the short term on that. They're close, I believe was the last reporting I saw. I don't know if anything's official yet, but it's going to be what looks like a five-year, $125 million extension, $100 million in total guarantees, $50 million in fully guaranteed money at signing for Miles Garrett with the Cleveland Browns, who are in desperate need of a bounce-back season.
You like that move?
No, I don't. I don't like paying pass rushers that much money.
Yeah, there's just some positions that I'm not as comfortable going into that territory, and I don't think that's one that I think ends up giving you enough value for that kind of money.
Yep, it's very hard to get that much value out of it. There you go, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where the Beaverton and Lower Division locations are all back up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com, or stop by one of the locations. They got great deals going on the entire month of July. Lots to get to in the final hour. We had to bump NFL True or False, so we'll get to that coming up. It is Mail Sack Day, so get your questions in, 503-250-1080. That is the fan text line. What else we got? Mike Leach asked a question that I want to get to. We have a Post Malone story that needs to be talked about. Also, the NBA snitch hotline has been used, apparently, and a player is leaving the bubble. There's NBA news. Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.